with you again tonight. It's been a, you've heard my voice a lot today, and I'm sure most of you will be glad that I'm leaving early. But as Charlie said, I do got to break out of here a little bit early, so after the lesson, I've got to head and catch a plane. So if I've said anything that you believe I need to be withstood to the face, or you have vegetables you want to throw, Charlie will be standing in for me in the back of the room tonight. He has graciously agreed to do that. But again, I appreciate the fact that you're here. I'm so glad that you've come to worship with us again tonight. And we want to stay on the same idea that we did this morning and that really we started a couple of weeks ago. The idea of the power that is there in confession. And in order for the power of confession to have room, in order for people to be able to come and unburden themselves, I'm persuaded that we have to create an atmosphere that is willing and able to accept that. That we've got to create the infrastructure necessary for people to come and unburden themselves with the sins and the difficulties that they're going through in life. That we should be this city of refuge where they can come and find safety and find grace and find those that are ready and willing to help. Because they're at their most vulnerable state. This morning, our concentration was on the church and how we ought to be a city of refuge. About how Jesus said, you'll know those that are mine. You'll know my church. You'll know where it's at based on the way that they love each other. And I'm persuaded that this is part of that idea. That we love each other through sin. We love them back from the difficulties that they've put themselves in. And we're there to help with rehabilitation. We're there to help push them back to where they ought to be, where they can stand on their own two feet. We've talked about in that lesson on confession, if you remember, that based on just the law of large numbers, based on the number of people we have here, and just the difficulties that we deal with in everyday life, that there should be somebody every lesson from our group that comes forward, that comes forward not just because they need to announce public prayer, not just because there's public things that they're dealing with, but simply to ask for the prayers of the congregation. Simply to say that I'm struggling with X, Y, or Z and I need help. There's somebody here tonight that's struggling with something. And there's a reason why you haven't unburdened yourself. I'm persuaded the number one reason why people don't come is not because there's nothing wrong, but there's fear. There's fear of the way others will react. There's fear if you come forward. There's fear of just coming forward. I mean, it's as much as, you know, really there's what, 25, 30, 40 feet to the back of the room? That's the longest 30 or 40 feet you're ever going to walk, right? There's fear just of walking down front and saying, I've messed some stuff up, or that I'm not what I thought I was and I'm struggling and I'm weak. There's fear there. The beauty of the God that we serve is that because of that fear and because he knows our nature, this isn't the only way you can get help. This isn't the only way. You know, it's not just in coming to the front when the invitation's offered. You can come in a multitude of ways. You can, if it's something that's on your heart tonight and you can't walk forward, I'll come get you. Raise your hand, wave at me, I'll come find you. But maybe all of this and being in front of so many people is terrifying to you. When we're gathered together in the midst of two or three others, sometimes it's that small group. Sometimes it's somebody that you already have an established relationship with that you feel comfortable with, and it's that group that you need. Tonight, I want us to talk about being, while the church, while the kingdom is one large city of refuge, I want us to talk about how our homes can become individual cities of refuge, places of refuge, where people can come to us. And we can create and craft the environment where we as individuals have the lights on, if you will, for others to come. Now, there is, when we understand this, and tonight's lesson's not on the difference between what an individual can do and what the church can do. That's not what we're talking about here. Really quickly, let's understand that this is an individual issue, right? James chapter 5, 19 and 20 says, my brothers, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone brings him back, let him know that whoever brings back a sinner from his wandering will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. Do you see the church in that picture? It's not saying whatever church brings back sinners. This is an individual responsibility that we have to bring back those that are lost. Galatians chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, again the individual, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and thus fulfill the law of Christ. Individually, we've got a responsibility for lost souls the same way the church does. The church is responsible for reaching out to lost souls, but me, my household, who I am and the sphere of influence that I have, has the same exact responsibility on an individual level. So how do I do that, right? How do I create the atmosphere? How do I create the infrastructure? How do I create the place where there's a sign out front, if you will, metaphorically, of my house that says it's safe here. You can come and it's going to be okay. I think it begins with hospitality. Hospitality is such a vitally important part of the New Testament that is way too often overlooked and underappreciated and understudied. And I'm guilty of that. I do, you know, roughly half the preaching around here. I can't tell you the last time I preached on hospitality. And that's a shame. That's my fault. But hospitality is really important. You think about the church there in Jerusalem. In Acts chapter 2, after the first gospel sermon, we have a big, large number that are added to the church, right? And then as the church continues to grow on, it more or less doubles. It's a little bit more than doubles later on. And it says, and I think about how fast they grew, how strong they were, what they did. And I've wondered, what's the secret sauce there? What's the magic that's going on there? Is it that there's apostles there that are teaching truth? Maybe that's part of it, but that's not what's emphasized. It says that they met house to house daily. Now, please understand, let's just look at logistics here. There's 5,000 that are there in that church in Jerusalem. There is not a building in Jerusalem that would hold 5,000 people. Maybe the synagogue, but you're not getting a private building that quickly that's holding that many people. So what did they do? In smaller groups, they came and they met house to house. And they spent time in each other's homes and each other's lives. And they spent time getting to know each other, getting to understand each other, learning of their problems. You see, we skip ahead from there to when Joe the Levite, better known as Barnabas, and Ananias and Sapphira, and people come and they give money. That didn't happen overnight. People didn't all of a sudden, hey, we're thrown together and we've all been redeemed from our sins and now everybody go, let's sell the property. There's time that takes place between those verses. And that time of living with one another, living from house to house, spending time studying, teaching, learning, that closeness that they have allows them to be able to do big things and make big sacrifices for the good of everyone else. People are not going to do that, and none of us are going to do that for strangers. We're just not. We're not built that way. We'd all love to say we would, don't we? All of us would love to say, well, yes, if there was someone in need, I would do what was necessary. But the truth is, where we're really willing and able to sacrifice, it's those that we're the closest to, right? It's those that we have the deepest connection with. That's where we make large sacrifices. But we can't grow close to one another. We can't build these bonds, and we can't create an infrastructure of safety when we see each other 4 hours a week. And I'm being generous with the 4 hours. We can't build those bonds inside these four walls. It's just not possible. We can do an okay job of it, but we can't get close enough, strong enough with those that we just see here to be able to really and truly feel comfortable unburdening ourselves. I want you to think, and please, nobody say anything out loud, but I just want you to look around and I want you to think, if you had big problems, large problems in life, soul jeopardy problems in life, how many people in this room are you comfortable picking up the phone and calling? I bet it's not 78. I bet the number's lower than 78. And I want you to think about what's the difference between those that you feel comfortable picking up the phone and talking about your soul being in jeopardy and you really, truly, desperately need. What's the difference between them and the ones that you're not that comfortable with? What's the difference? Is it that you've spent time together? Is it that they really know you? Is it that maybe you've spent time in each other's houses or gone on vacation together or shared several meals together or you've had some deep things that you've gone through with them? You see, because that to me in my mind is the key there. That's the key that makes all this stuff work. Is that when we build these relationships, when we have the strength because we've spent some time together, we're going to be comfortable to talk about some things. We're going to be comfortable because they know somewhere along the way I haven't been able to hide all my imperfections. They know while we were on vacation together, while we were sitting in each other's house, they've seen me act a fool. We've let our guard down. Here's the other part of hospitality. If you're struggling with something, especially if it's private, especially if it's something that you're embarrassed about, that you're not proud of, how many of you very comfortably in an adult auditorium Bible class want to raise your hand and talk about that? I sure don't. And I'll talk to walls. But how many of you, if we change the environment and we're sitting on a couch, and it's just us, and there's nobody else around, how many of you then become a lot more comfortable talking about some stuff? If we just change the environment, we shrink the number of people, we're to a place where it's private, where not anybody else can overhear, and it's a place where the one that's ready to give is as prepared as the one that's ready to receive. Because that's the other trick here. If you're going to have a house of refuge, you got to be willing to hear some things that may make you uncomfortable and not overreact. If someone sits down on your couch in your house and says, I'm struggling in my marriage. I've been having an affair for 10 years and nobody knows about it. Can you keep a straight face? Or do you immediately gasp and turn on the judgment and start to blame? Well, how could you do that? I know your spouse. Or do we talk them through the problem? If someone's sitting on your couch and says, I have an addiction to internet pornography and I spend 4 or 5 hours every night watching internet pornography, is your immediate reaction to say, ooh, that's gross? Because that kills everything. The minute that we react or overreact, caught off guard, we immediately start shutting down the conversation. Oh, I didn't really mean to say that, and it's not really that. I shouldn't have said anything, and they get up and they leave. Hospitality, and the more time we spend with one another, the closer we get to one another, the more willing we're going to be to not overreact, to not react in an off-putting way. I'm not saying the first time that it happens, it's going to be easy. I made a decision several years ago, I don't even know when, but I would help people out in counseling. especially couples that I knew, that I had spent some time with, that I was comfortable with. And I've done that several times for several different couples. And in the very first one of those meetings, when I think I know what I'm doing and I've got myself prepared and I've thought about all of this, the very first one of those meetings, one of them says something and it took everything in me to not react. It's not easy. People that are trained counselors, licensed social workers, licensed psychologists will tell you some of the stuff you're going to hear is not easy to hear. But we've got to think about what the end result we're looking for is. What am I looking for here? What I want to communicate to the person that's here is that I love them and I'm here to help them through their problem. I'm not here to judge you about how bad the problem is. I'm not here to tell you how terrible you are for making a mistake. My job in the city of refuge is to provide you some sanctuary and help rehabilitate you. My job here is to see what we can do to help you fix the problems in your life. And sometimes in fixing the problems of your life means that there's going to be some awful consequences you're going to have to go through. But as someone that loves you, I'll help you through them. And maybe the consequence is you've done some stuff that's awful and you're going to lose your entire family over it. That you've done some things that they can't come back from. But we'll love you and we'll help. We'll do our best to help you get through it. See, forgiveness of sins does not forgive consequences. And though you escape to a city of refuge, though you can find redemption, it doesn't mean the consequences aren't gone. Remember what, back to Numbers from this morning? Remember what happened there? You had to flee to the city and you had to wait until the high priest died before you could go back. What happens to your land the whole time? What happens to your family the whole time? You have no control over any of that. You've got consequences for what's happened. And you're there and you may be hiding out and you may be rehabilitating. You may learn a lot in your stay. But at the end of the day, you face some drastic, maybe financial, psychological, familial consequences that you can't do anything about. But we can't get to that point. We can't have the lights of hospitality on if we don't actively practice it. Again, I'm not asking for a show of hands here, please. Understand most of my questions are rhetorical and they're things for you to think about. But I want you to think about, one, if you've ever had people in your house. Ever had people over for dinner? Ever had people over just to talk, to visit? And I want you to maybe think about the first time. First time you did that. How nervous you were. What you worried about with people coming over. Because one of the big fears of hospitality and the reason that a lot of people don't practice a lot of hospitality is because they're worried about the wrong things. They're worried about what the house is going to look like. What are people going to think about my house? Is it clean? Is it nice enough? Is it in a good part of town? What are they going to think about the way my house looks? What are they going to think about whatever I serve them to eat? What if they don't like this? What if I've got weird tastes? What if it's not good enough? Hospitality is about none of those things, by the way. One of the benefits of preaching, and why I don't ever trust skinny preachers, is that you get invited to a lot of houses, and you get invited to a lot of places to spend time with people. And I'll tell you from experience, and I'm sure Scott's got some great stories too, but I spent a summer preaching in Canada. I have no idea 90% of the meals that I ate, what they were. I don't know what kind of meat they were serving. It did not taste like cow to me. But I was never there for the food. I was never there because of what we were eating. I was never there because of how comfortable the house was or how clean it was. As a matter of fact, I couldn't tell you, out of everybody's house that I've been to in this congregation or any congregation I've ever been a part of, I can't tell you whether anybody's house was clean or not. Can't tell you anything about that. I'll tell you one story because they're not here and it was a faraway place. But I was doing a meeting at a congregation. And this lady had mentioned that the first part of the week, that one day that week, and I can't remember if it was Thursday or Friday, she was going to have us over and we were going to eat at her house. So that sounds fabulous. Love to have you. Love to be there. We get there and her house is an apartment in what appeared to me to be a housing project. In this apartment that was not as big as the pulpit, she had us and two or three other families. And she, I can't even remember what we ate. I think it was some kind of fish that she fried. And she's going through this meal and she's, you know, worried about where everybody's at. And there's people sitting on the side of her bed and some people sitting on a stool over here and some people standing over here. And the whole time we're there, we're visiting, we're talking, we're laughing, we're sharing stories, we're getting closer to one another. I'm convinced that I don't think she thought about any of that. Whether the house was clean, whether they had enough room. She just wanted to have a meal for the preacher. She just wanted to have people in her place. She just wanted to hear the voices. She'd lived alone, been alone for a long time. See, we worry about the wrong stuff. And we worry about the environment that we're creating about cleanliness or what food we're serving. And we forget that the environment that we're creating is a place where people can come and share their lives. That's the environment we're trying to create. Not that, you know, again, I'm not recommending that all of us live in squalor by any means. But what I'm saying is those things aren't as important as being able to have somebody sit down on the couch, on the bench, on the rocker outside and be able to talk to you about what they're struggling with. To trust you enough. To know that you're there to help. That you're there to redeem a soul from sin. That you're there to be encouraging when they need to be encouraging. Because not every problem that you and I get in is a soul issue, soul jeopardy problem. Sometimes we're just struggling. Sometimes we're just down. Sometimes life is just beat on us. And what we need is a soft voice, a hug, and some encouraging words. That's what we really desperately need. We've got to understand what hospitality is about. Is it any wonder in the qualifications for elders and the qualifications for shepherds and the qualifications for the ones that lead us that one of those qualifications is about hospitality? You ever wondered why that one's in there? I'm telling you, this is why. Because the idea of that closeness that comes from hospitality allows shepherds to lead. Allows us to be able to go and sit down at the shepherd's house and say, here's what I'm struggling with. Because that door's open, because the hospitality's been extended, because they've got an arm out around you, because their house is a light of refuge. That's why it's important. That's why that qualification is in there. The attributes that we talked about this morning for the church are just as important as the attributes for the individual. Compassion, understanding, rehabilitation, empathy. You see, if we want to be, if our homes are going to be a city of refuge for people to flee to, they've got to be properly prepared. And I don't mean vacuumed. I mean, they've got to be prepared where when people come in, they find compassion. They find the fact that they're loved. That there's help that's there. That we're understanding of the situation that they're in. Because we know that we were lost. We know that we've struggled. I don't think there's anybody in this room that can ever say that their life's been perfect and they've never struggled. I think there's any of us here that would say that. We've all had bad times and bad days and bad weeks, and some of us have had some bad years, right? Of things that we've been through. But because of that, because we know what it's like when someone's there, we can be understanding when someone else has reached that point in the road. I can tell you and I can empathize with what you're going through because I've been there. I know what it's like. I know what you're feeling. And I can tell you that it's going to get better. But let's help you get better. Let's see how we can get involved to pull them through it. Let's see what rehabilitation needs to occur and how I can help. Because the fact of the matter is, part of this city of refuge is a bunch of people that are there that are willing and able and ready to get their hands dirty to help. And it's going to cost us some time. And it's going to cost us some heartache. And it's going to cost us some effort. It's going to cost us some energy. And it may cost us financially. But it's worth it for a soul, isn't it? Is there any one of us that can say that there's a limit of what we would do to help save a soul when we know what the value of that soul is? But we've got to prepare ourselves for that, right? We can't go out tomorrow and say, all right, listen to Mike's sermon, everything's great, throwing up the flag at the house, everybody come on in. Right, it's going to take some time. It's going to take some prayer. We're going to have to talk to God about where we are, about what we need, how we need to grow as individuals. And maybe we find out we're on the hospitality side of this and we need to do a better job of that. Maybe what we find out in our prayer and our soul searching is we need to go seek some hospitality from somebody else. Maybe what we find is we've got stuff that we need to deal with, that we're struggling with, that we've tried long enough alone and now we're ready to go get some help. Because here's the truth of the matter. Here's what's most frustrating about our spiritual walk. All of us want to believe we can fix our problems by ourselves. And that's probably the second biggest trick of the devil. The first biggest trick is convincing the world that he doesn't exist. The second biggest trick is convincing you that you're strong enough and you should be able to do it alone. But God never told you to do it alone. Matter of fact, he told you to find others. Matter of fact, the verses we just looked at talked about bearing one another's burdens, talked about helping others back. The whole point of the family of God, the whole reason why we're together is because we absolutely need each other all the time. But we don't use this tool enough. Whether we need help or whether we can give help. We've got to be better as a family about creating these environments. I'm convinced the more and more work I've done and the more I've done in this study that the environment of an individual is probably even stronger than the environment we can create as a congregation. Because of what I said at the beginning. Because it's hard for people to come forward. It's hard to be in the middle of this many people. It's easier to come to somebody's house. It's easier to pick up the phone. Most of you know I spend a lot of time on the road, and thankfully in my life, so does Charlie and so does Jimmy. One of the great blessings that I've had is being on the road, and when I'm struggling with stuff, being able to pick up the phone and call both of them. And in the businesses that we're in and the things that we have to do, I've been able to share some things with them about struggles I've had with people that understand and that know what and they're sympathetic to the situation that I'm in. You know, there's a lot of things we've got to do from a client engagement, social stuff, and some of that you're just not comfortable with. You don't ever get comfortable. But when you can pick up that phone, and that's something that I'm not going to talk about from the pulpit or come forward and talk about, but there's brothers in the car with me that we've created a hospitality, if you will, that we can talk to one another about things, that we can pick up the phone when we're struggling, that we can spend that time when we're in front of a windshield talking about things that are important. We've got to create those groups. We've got to have those brothers and sisters that we can draw in and put our arms around to where we've got the ability to share stuff we're going through with. We're not all exactly alike. We're not all in the same line of work. We don't all have the same family stuff. But I'll promise you, if you'll open yourself up, you'll open your heart up to others and let them open their hearts up to you, you'll find that there's other people within our family that have gone through or are going through the same thing you're going through. That have had the family issues that you've got. That have been through difficult things at work like you've been through. That have been through difficult, terrible losses, maybe, like you've been through. and that can help you through that. But if we don't get here, if we don't have that openness, if we don't have this place of refuge where we can go and we can find each other, there's so much valuable information that's just lost. That's just lost. Because we haven't accessed it. Because we haven't put ourselves out there to grab a hold of what we need to help us in that time of struggle. The answers to our prayers oftentimes are the people sitting right next to us. Lastly, there's no replacing the value of deep relationships. There's no replacing any of that. Some of the most difficult things in Scripture that we talk about, confessing our sins one to another, that we talk about saving someone another one. Jude talks about snatching them even from the fire. You can't do any of those things without relationships. If we haven't spent the time together, if we haven't invested in one another, we can't pull those things off. My big difficulty always, when we get to the idea of having to withdraw fellowship from somebody, my struggle every time I study through that, every time I've taught on that, every time we've had to practice that as a congregation, my first question is, was there fellowship there in the first place? Because you can't withdraw something that you never had. I work at a bank. If you don't put money in the account, you can't withdraw out of it. Or you can, but they charge you a bunch of fees and it gets bad. But we've got to have the fellowship in order to be able to withdraw it. We've got to have the investment in one another's lives to be able to say that you're risking something here if you go too far. We've got to have the depth of relationship. That way we can call on it when we're encouraging a brother or sister that's gone too far. That we can put an arm around them and say, I love you. I was there when your grandparents passed away. I was there when your son was born. I was there when you struggled, when you sent him off to school. And I've been there through every part of your life. But if you're going to continue down this path, I can't go with you anymore. I want you. I'll drag you back if I have to. But I can only say those things if I was actually there. I can't say that stuff if we never had those relationships. And when we have to withdraw fellowship from somebody and they're standing on the outside, they say, what am I losing? Well, they can't eat with me anymore. They never ate with me. I can't go to them for help anymore, but they were never there when I needed help. You see the difficulty of it? If we don't have the depth of relationship that we ought to have, we can't do the scriptural things that we need to do as a family. We can't lean on those relationships. We can't leverage those relationships. We can't snatch somebody from the fire when they were never in our hands in the first place. We can't get the depth of these relationships. We can't get as close as we need to be in 4 hours a week. We can't do that. I beg you as we close this lesson, I beg you to give careful consideration to the lesson this morning and the lesson tonight. And I beg you to ask yourself, how can we be better? How can we build a better church where we look like what Jesus wants us to look like, where we look like a city of refuge, where we've got a flag outside that says, if you come in here, you're safe and we'll help you. And then how can we as individuals have that same torch burning at home? How can our homes be places of refuge? And if your home, if you're not ready for your home to be a place of refuge, ask yourself the hard question, do I need to go find a place of refuge for myself? How deep are my relationships? And what do I need to work on to get them better? If I feel like I'm outside of the family of God, if I'm not as close as I want to be, how do we fix that? And if you don't know how to do that on your own, if you don't know where to start, come see me. Come see Scott. Come see the elders. We'll help you. We'll help you build those relationships. We'll get you with people that you need to get with, and we'll help you through this process. If you don't know where to start, that's where to start. Come find one of us. Let us help you. Let us show you how to love and how to be loved. Because if we don't do that, friends, we're missing the whole boat. we're missing the greatest blessing that God ever gave us, and that's each other. We desperately, vitally need one another. The question is, what do we got to do to be better? What do we got to do to be better about advertising that, about broadcasting that, about having a home and having a church family that screams, we're here to help? If you're not a child of God, and tonight, as we've talked about these things, it sounds like what you're looking for. As we've talked about these things, you need refuge. All things are ready tonight, and know the reason why we talk about this stuff here is because we want to be that city of refuge. We're here to help. The first step is learning about God. The more you learn about God and how much God loves you, the more you can't help but love Him in return. The deeper you fall in love with God, the more you'll trust Him, the more you'll see that He's always wanted to dwell with us, and He's done everything in the world to make it possible for us to dwell together. That'll give you the strength that you need to turn away from your sins, to embrace Jesus as the way, the truth, and the life, and to die to your sins and have them washed away in baptism. Rising out of that water to take hold of newness of life, being selfless, and finding out how you can be a refuge for somebody else, how you can help others. Because that's the trick here to life, is how much we can help each other get from that point that we were in sorrow to feeling the safety of being in a city of refuge. If you are a child of God, but you've fallen off this wheel, you've fallen off the cycle, and you need to be plugged back in, you need to find refuge. Let us know, let us help you. If you don't have the strength and the courage to come forward, raise your hand, wave at me, wink, whatever you got to do, and I'll come get you wherever you are. The goal here is for you to find help in the time of need. The goal is for you to find refuge wherever you are and however you need that. Make it known as we stand and as we sing.